This is Ashley Hodge with the Sikkim 365 podcast, Ring by Spring. And I like that we have an opportunity to talk about championships in this sport called men's basketball. Baylor's one of the favorites to win the national championship next year. They're, you know, one of the top 10 teams or so in the odds, you know, in Vegas. And they've got a lineup that should be a lot of fun to watch. Kendall Cout, it's exciting to talk about basketball. We watched the resurgence of Baylor football, what hopefully is a resurgence of Baylor football on Saturday, and now we have a basketball to talk about. This is a fun time of year.
It definitely is. You know, the quest for six may exist in football, but the quest to win another national championship is alive in basketball, so I am thrilled for media days coming up on Wednesday and talk hoops with you, Ashley.
Yeah, and you'll have to look out for my guy Chris Weiss. He's a friend of mine. I've known him since the 90s. He worked for the Baylor Bear Foundation. I think he's going to be the host for Baylor in Kansas City. I know you guys have tried to connect maybe for lunch, but never actually connected, right?
We have not connected. He's texted me several times very nicely. So it'd be nice to connect with him sometime in the future because he seems like a great dude.
Yeah. Well, Baylor basketball has had a couple scrimmages. They've been able to win those. I mean, you know, it's more about trying to find out rotations, get ready for the season. Whether you win or lose isn't as important. But, you know, we got a bunch of competitive guys. They're trying to win games and even in scrimmages against good opponents. Grand Canyon, who is a sneaky good team. I was pretty impressed with them. I saw this one live, and I really thought they were physical. Their guards were good. They got size. They got a lot of you know, potential, I think, to make some noise as a mid-major. And then A&M this past Saturday, the score leaked that Baylor was able to outlast the Aggies 80-72. And unlike last year when the Aggies got the best of Baylor, that score didn't get, you know, the details of the scrimmage didn't really get leaked as much this year. But we've gotten some feedback, so we can talk about that. But, you know, those are good tests, and we got a really big one out of the gate, Gonzaga. And that's the one they're trying to get ready for. I think, you know, Baylor likes what they see. They've got a lot to work on. We can talk about some of the strengths and weaknesses as we see them. But first of all, how excited are you for this team? I know you've written a lot about it, you know, that you think this could be a potential national champion team and certainly has an opportunity to be in the hunt for a Big 12 championship, which any team that wins the Big 12 is going to be a national championship contender. The Big 12 is brutal, especially at the top. What's your take so far as we go into the season, Kendall?
Yep. Ashley, my take from the top is I think there's a real shot Baylor could win the title because I don't, once again, we're in another season where I don't see a dominant team. I could see Houston only losing once or twice during the regular season. But you know, if you're a Houston fan, you can always say, is the attack on us kind of like the attack on the Warriors? Was a jump shooting team could never win the NBA title till they did. But I think there is something to the way Kelvin Sampson coaches his team and has them play, that they always seem to get injured by the end of the season. And you could say the injuries last year weren't fair or whatever else, but I'm just a little worried about that team, thinking they're a champion. They're going to, by the end of the season, be fully healthy with the style they use and that their offense will be there in a tight game with maybe who they rely upon to be their leading scorers at the end of the season. I know you were at that Grand Canyon scrimmage, Ashley. I think if you're maybe not a super deep watcher of college basketball, haven't tuned in yet, hey, it was close against Grand Canyon. That could be a little worrying for some folks. Baylor, I think maybe 2018, played that scrimmage at the Farrell against Houston, and I think ended up losing it late, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe I'm mixing years together as we get older. But that was a sign that maybe the season didn't go as well as some people hoped. So what was maybe a positive sign from that Grand Canyon scrimmage, and what maybe was the thing from that scrimmage that had you say, this probably has to improve for Baylor to be playing on that final weekend of the season?
Yeah, the overwhelming positive is the play of Rob Wright. He's been terrific in both the scrimmages that Baylor's had. And I think I was told he's like 10 assists and two turnovers in those two scrimmages. He's ready. I mean, he's like a guy that looks like he's going to provide a lot for this Baylor team. And it's going to create some really interesting lineups because I think going into the summer, they were probably expecting him to play more spot minutes, and he's been really, really impressive, and he's improved a lot over the summer. I got a hold of some of the, you know, just the testing numbers. I think from my memory, and I'm off probably, you know, one digit here, but I think he was like a 31.5-inch vertical when he got to campus. He's like a, you know, 35.5-inch vertical, you know, by the end of the summer. he was doing this NBA drill, and 10-5 is elite. You know, I think there was only like five or six guys in the whole combine that did that last year. He was like 10-8, 10-9 when he got to campus. He was like 10-4 by the end of the summer. So he worked really hard. Scott Drews pointed him out as one of the hardest workers on the team. He and Omir, I think, were named specifically, just always in the gym. And I think it's going to show. I think he's going to be a guy that's going to be on the floor a lot, and he's going to be hard to keep off the rotations. He just affects winning so much. So that's going to be interesting, because you can make an argument that, you know, the strongest lineups, I think Matt Norlander said this in a recent comment about Baylor, and I would agree with him, that you're probably looking at the strongest lineups being an Omir at the five, you know, an elite small ball center, and then having four guys surrounding him, you know, four guards, and maybe Celestine. And Ojewun is going to play a lot. I mean, he's going to be a vital part of this team. But, you know, I think when crunch time, you're going to be looking at, you know, having, you know, guards and Omir as your big. And that's an interesting lineup. A lot of teams have done that with success. You know, it's got limitations for sure, you know, size-wise. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's the emergence of Rob Wright. I also think that everything we thought this team would be good at, I think they're good at. Three-point shooting. They got a lot of creators. They got a lot of quickness on the perimeter. I think the Aggies had, you know, 23 turnovers against Baylor, which is, you know, that's a good sign. So I think there's going to be defensively a lot of ball pressure and a lot of, you know, just havoc that's going to create, you know, good things for us defensively. The concerns, defensive rebounding, I think that's a big concern. And foul trouble for Omir, he's got to stay out of foul trouble. He's too vital of a player. And, you know, just keeping him healthy and out of foul trouble is a big deal. And, you know, just there's going to be nights where we don't make shots. And we're going to be very reliant on the three-point shot. So during, you know, those games, are we going to be able to take the ball to the hoop, get to the foul line, make our free throws? I think those are my concerns. But I think this is a complete team, and I think we got eight really good players and that are starter quality players. And I think it's going to be, as long as we don't get a key guy or two injured, I think it's going to be a team that has a chance to make some significant noise in March.
I think so too, Ashley. And great stuff on that info about the scrimmage. At Media Days, if for folks who haven't been or kind of wonder behind the curtain how does media stuff work, they give us a 30 to 45 minute window where you can go by and talk to different coaches. But a lot of people like to get their one-on-one with the coach, which is often very annoying, because if you're just a radio gentleman who's not going to ask unique questions, I think Paul Catalina is going, and I know Paul, Craig, Smokey would always ask unique questions of people. But if you stand to these things, what happens is people come by with their recorder and they want to get recordings of them asking questions, getting an answer, where their questions are the exact same ones you could imagine the dumbest person alive would ask Bill Self or Scott Drew or Jerome Tang. So a couple of years ago, you know, when Tang heads to K-State, every question is, you know, Scott, what's it like to lose Jerome? And I, you know, when I finally got to talk to Scott, I was like, hey, Scott, why don't you just record the answer so you don't have to answer it 10 times at this session? And he was laughing about it. But the things I like about it are you really get to ask in a one-on-one setting. And I think by the time I can talk to Scott or some of the players, they're happy to actually answer questions about the specific players in the team and what they're doing. A few years back, LJ Cryer was freaking out because I was asking him about certain sets they ran before he was a freshman, being like, who's this spy? And I was like, you know, maybe a little irony there now for that question. But in terms of Scott, I think with what you mentioned, Ashley, one thing I'm interested in asking him is how he's going to approach this season if, let's say, Omir gets his second foul 14 minutes into the game.
Yeah.
Do you keep playing him more minutes? And then how does he balance if Rob Wright starts emerging as a really good ball handler? Do you have him take the ball up the floor more? What do you do? I think my guess, and Ashley, you'll have some insight into this too, is that if Rob Wright's the player we expect him to be and he doesn't have freshman lumps very much to start, is that it'll be kind of like Davion and Jared in the sense that clearly Davion was really the point guard, Jared was the shooting guard. I think that's probably the setup that I would imagine. But it sounds like Rob Wright has been so good that there's not really any doubt that he's a Big 12 quality starting point guard and he's going to factor in for major minutes this season.
Yeah, I think so. I think this team, you know, we say this, we've said it before, that the team has some similarities. I think we said it about the Flagler, Keontae George, LJ Cryer trio, and they certainly did on the offensive end, definitely not on the defensive end. They had some similarities to that national championship team, but this team, I think, is more like that. I don't think they'll be as gritty defensively. they may be even a little bit better offensively. I mean, I think this team could be number one in offensive efficiency for sure. You know, I think Langston Love shooting the heck out of the ball, I was told, and, you know, really shooting at a high percentage. And, you know, his lateral movement's probably not 100%, maybe 80% right now. So I think, you know, there's an idea of maybe playing him at the four, kind of like a Darion Williams for Texas Tech some. And that's interesting. He's a good rebounder. He's strong. He can shoot it really well. He can drive it, you know. So then you create all kinds of mismatch opportunities. You really put people in bad positions, maybe even have to match your size, you know, and go smaller and take them away from what they do well. You know, that's, I mean, it's interesting. You know, Baylor's got a lot of possibilities. We haven't even mentioned Jalen Celestine. He was the best player for Baylor in the Grand Canyon scrimmage. You know, there was a time when, you know, Grand Canyon was up maybe six or so, five, and they just ran set after set for him, and he was just knocking down threes. I mean, 6 for 8 maybe? I don't know, something like that. Like, he's a cold-blooded killer from three, and there's so many creators that they'll get him open, you know, and then when Langston gets back, same thing. Jaden Nunn shooting the ball really well. Roach has struggled a little bit with his shooting in the scrimmages, but we know he's very capable, and we know he's a guy you can rely on. You know, he's got a lot of resume that proves that. You know, I think O'Meara is everything we thought he would be, just a beast inside. VJ Edgecombe, I think, is going to have his moments where he's spectacular and he's going to make, you know, freshman mistakes, but he's going to be the best athlete on the floor every single night. And I just think Rob just brings a real steady influence. And then who else we hadn't talked about? Josh. You know, I think what they're really challenging Josh with is the motor and rebounding, setting picks. They're like, man, we need you to do the dirty work. He's got to be that guy. And I think they're challenging him that with that. And he didn't put up very impressive stats from what I was told in the A&M scrimmage, but he really affected winning. He was plus 13 or so from a plus minus perspective. So, I mean, there's a lot to be excited about, and I think it's a team that's maybe missing a, you know, front court player if you're going to put the ideal team together. But, you know, in an age where you have to allocate resources and you know, be somewhat prudent with how you develop rosters, I think Scott Drew and his staff have done a really good job, and you know, have an experienced roster mixed in with a couple freshmen. But these freshmen are going to make a huge impact, and I think we're going to see a really good version of Baylor basketball this year.
Makes a ton of sense, and I think the A&M score should alert people to how good this team can be. Buzz Williams, you know, hasn't exactly gotten it going to the degree he would have liked in Aggieland, but they should be a very good team this season, yeah, with Wade Taylor back at the helm leading them. So that's a really impressive victory for Baylor. That's a victory you really like to see, because that team has some experience with Wade Taylor back. And Baylor obviously integrating new pieces pretty much everywhere, especially with Langston Love not back and Jaden Nunn not being the focal point of the offense. That victory really means a lot, I think, shows to what the ceiling can be for this team. And then I really am impressed by how Baylor's getting out and getting after it early. We two shots you could always take on this podcast. Number one, Oklahoma football. We're not going to take any shots at Oklahoma football because every team in the SEC has already taken plenty of shots and beaten them. But the second one is, although both of us are friends with people on the Texas Tech staff, I can't even begin to believe why this non-conference schedule was allowed to be played. Have you taken a look at Texas Tech's non-con, Ashley?
I did. It is terrible.
Yeah, they are playing one current top 85 team on KenPom.
Yeah.
They are playing zero road games, and they are playing one Power 4 school. if it comes down to it, and I'm on the committee, and there's an argument for Texas Tech between like a 3 seed and there are a couple other teams in that seed line, I would immediately walk up to the board and drop them 2 seed lines and say, this cannot be allowed. You're going to hear when the debate rages between, is the Big 12, is the SEC, is the Big East the top conference? I think those three will be the debate this season, and probably really just the Big 12 and the SEC. They will bring up Texas Tech's non-con and Iowa State's non-con, and especially Tech, though. They'll bring that non-con up, so you're going to hear about it if you're not attuned to the schedules. It is the most embarrassing thing I've seen since Texas Tech football played Baylor. It is unconscionable that this was allowed to happen. And I will, 10 years from now, I will probably see somebody from the Texas Tech staff and say, remember in 2024, 2025, when you all woke up and said, schedule somebody worse, and whoever scheduled should deserve a raise because they achieved their task better than anybody I've ever seen. It is the worst non-con in the history of a major college team. Like, remember when Tech had that gentleman who had a hearing issue, who was like 5'8", as their point guard with Billy Gillespie.
Yes.
That team should have played an even tougher non-con schedule than this one. So that's my rant against Texas Tech. But I can assure you, folks, if you go and look at their non-con, you are not looking at a misprint. The good teams did not just disappear and get replaced by awful teams. They're actually playing that schedule.
Yeah, I noticed that. I was really surprised at how bad it was. So they do have a game against Texas A&M. That's the only one, right? That's a decent game. And
that's it. And what, like
are they playing
the
a holiday
one?
Tournament? Yeah, DePaul. They're number 166 in the strength metric. I know you don't control who you get in the Big East, Big 12 Challenge. Well, you do. I mean, you do somewhat if you're, the better teams get the better teams. But, yeah, I mean, even Houston, who's – you know, didn't play the toughest schedule last year. They got Alabama and Auburn, so that's, you know, they're teeing it up pretty good. And then of course Baylor's schedule's killer. Kansas is always killer. Iowa State has Auburn and Iowa, so that's decent. But yeah, I mean it does kind of remind you of TCU a few years back. I mean it is embarrassingly bad for a program that is expected to be a tournament team. You know, it'll be interesting to see. You know, I think they're going to be a top half of the Big 12 team, but you know, it's, I mean, KenPom's got them 12-8 and Baylor 12-8. I mean, man, I just look at that roster and I have a ton of respect for Grant as a coach, but I don't know. I just think the Baylor roster is a lot better, you know.
I think so too. And that schedule is so bad that I think Tech will probably get popped early in conference play and be like, yeah, oh wow,
right,
this is what it's like playing those athletes, in kind of the same vein that, you know, if you're Baylor and you play a bad first 4 minutes after playing Grambling State or Northwestern State or Alcorn State, you can understand it. But Baylor can always remember we played Gonzaga, we played Connecticut, we played some really good teams versus I don't understand how that was allowed to happen. I truly don't. I get Kirby Hocutt has had to hire 8 million coaches in his tenure at Texas Tech, but you think he'd have somebody to schedule on. I would be tweeting these jokes out there if we weren't friends with some people on that staff. But good Lord, is it sad?
Well, yeah, you know, KenPom's got a lot of respect for the Big 12. He's got 8 teams in the top 25. Cincinnati at 25, Tech at 19, BYU at 18. He's got Baylor at 11. He's got Iowa State at 17, actually, which is way below the polls. Or way, you know, it's higher than the polls, I should say. Not, you know, they're 3, 4, 5 in most of the preseason polls. I'm sorry, I'm misreading all this. Let's do a do over. I'm just looking at offensive efficiency. All right, Houston 1, Kansas 6, Iowa State 7, Arizona 8, Baylor 11, Tech 15, Cincinnati 17, BYU 21. So a lot of respect for BYU, which is kind of interesting. I think they'll be pretty good, but I don't know if they're top 25 good. Cincinnati's a team I think that's going to surprise people. I could see them finishing top 4 in the Big 12 this next year and knocking some of the expected powers out, hopefully not Baylor. But Houston, Kansas, Iowa State, Arizona, Baylor expected to be the favorites. Is that kind of how you see it, or do you have a hidden gem somewhere at the bottom of that conference?
I don't. You know, K-State, you could probably have a discussion about with Coleman Hawkins coming in. But I still think, you know, Jerome Tang, I think next year probably is the year they really take off, because it seems like he's gotten that NIL budget through the roof. And I definitely respect him a lot as a head coach, but I think he probably needs one more year, whereas I think this year he got a lot of money at the end. They spent it all on Coleman Hawkins, and he'll be a good player. But I think next year, where they have all that money, since they're still in the running for the number one player in the class, that everything I've been led to believe is that he is signing for whoever gives him $1 more than the next school, whether that be BYU or K-State.
Right.
And I think that actually would be better for K-State if they don't land him, because you can spend, you know, $2.5 million on two or three guys.
Right.
I think that's better than spending all the money on one guy. And the way that Baylor got both Jeremy Roach, Omir, and then was able to get Jalen late in the class, I think that's a much more valuable use of resources than just landing a Coleman Hawkins would be, or just landing one guy ultimately becomes as good as Coleman Hawkins is. And so I think that's probably where they are. So K-State maybe actually can get into that range, but I think probably regular season, Houston's the clear favorite. But it relates to, you know, when you get to the level that Baylor, KU, Houston play at, and the level Arizona is now playing at too, and that Iowa State's playing at, Iowa State may still want to win the Big 12 because they haven't done it. But those other four programs, that have all won national championships or been very good. Those four are playing to win another national championship or to be on the final weekend of the season. And if you're Houston, you just got to stay healthy. And at some level, Kelvin Sampson may have to decide, do I want, you know, LJ Cryer and Juwan Roberts to dive after a loose ball up by 45
right
against some school? And I think he does, because he's just kind of so intense and he feels like that's what got him there. But that's what he's got to be able to figure out, is can you do it versus, you know, himself, Scott Drew, I think Tommy Lloyd, all factor in what do you have to do to win the full season. Like, I'm not expecting Omar Ballo to play 38 minutes in some game in December if he's looking tired and get injured, versus I could see Juwan Roberts playing 43 minutes in an overtime game in January. Then by the time February hits, he's looking a step slow.
Yeah. And Ballo is at Indiana, by the way.
Oh, my God. This tells you. Jesus. I was literally reading the Evan Maya players,
yeah,
and I saw John Fanta's All-America team yesterday.
Yeah.
And that tells you, yes, how qualified I am to talk about the Arizona Wildcats.
And, oh, they have a good 16, roster.
I blame it on the 16-team league. I know, yeah. Caleb Love is still back. Before we started, I was about to make a joke about Eric Dixon still being at Villanova, but that was a snafu that was not good for America, and I'm glad you were there to correct me.
No problem. All right, let's talk about the Baylor schedule. We tee it up against Gonzaga in their backyard. Really tough opening night, and, you know, KenPom's got it 78-75 Gonzaga. How do you see that game? I would think I'm hoping Baylor plays a really competitive game. If they lose it, it's not going to alarm me at all. I mean, that's, you know, playing a team in their backyard, an experienced team. It's going to be a tough place to get out of there with a win. Baylor's experienced too. I mean, and they, you know, I think they can win that game, but you know, certainly you know, Baylor taking it to Gonzaga, you know, the last two times they played them, you know, may factor into, you know, how this game will go as well. Do you see that as a Gonzaga win, or what's your thoughts on that game?
Yeah, I actually I get the Vegas line. Everything makes sense for Baylor. Could be happy if it just plays close, playing in a different arena in Spokane. But I like Baylor in this game. Baylor obviously beating Gonzaga the last two times. We, you know, actually, I know you had the kind words for Mark Few inadvertently when we both walked out of that arena in South Dakota.
Oh, man. Well, I've told this on the podcast before, but for those listening, as we were walking out together on a very cold night in South Dakota, and I saw one of the Baylor GAs, and I said something along the lines of, man, what a win. Man, that just was like an incredible comeback, or, you know, something, you know, that I wouldn't have said had I known Mark Few was right next to me. And I look over, and the place was so intimate that, you know, Mark Few is literally standing like right next to me. And I just felt terrible. I was like, you know, because that's not me. I, you know, I'm a talk trash before the game. And then once the game's over, you know, you kind of like, you know, hey, let's acknowledge a great hard fought game, but that was really a kind of a disastrous last minute and a half for them. Up 9, minute and a half to go, you win those games, but they didn't, and Baylor pulled that one out. So that was a moment that Mark Few, I'm sure, would love to have back.
Yep.
I think Baylor, the national championship game stung a little more than that one, though.
You know, I think it probably did too. I think Baylor's got a better roster.
Yeah.
Ryan Nembhard's good. Nolan Hickman, you wonder, will he kind of make that leap that people thought he could make this season? Very possible that continuity can help Gonzaga out. They're an old team. But Baylor has played so well at the beginning of the seasons recently. The only time that feels like in recent memory they've gotten popped in an early game you kind of wondered about in the last few seasons was that game against Washington during the 2019-2020 season. And clearly Baylor had not finished its final roster then. Mark Vidal wasn't starting. Tristan right. Clark, the starting center then. So I think Baylor, maybe you can argue, won't have that yet, because maybe by the end of the season, Rob Wright and Jeremy Roach are sharing the backcourt together. But I think Scott will be willing, because he knows how big that game is, to, if somebody's not performing quickly, everybody knows, hey, Rob Wright's ready to take my minutes. I think that'll be a good sign for them. And then we'll see if Langston Love is a go for that game, which it sounds like he'll probably be.
Yeah.
Is he a full go? And then at what speed is he playing?
Right.
Does he feel a little bit slower? So that would probably be your biggest worry. But I think Omir will be a new down-low presence that Gonzaga hasn't had to plan for against Baylor in the past. And there's still some uncertainty playing Baylor with some of the changes on the coaching staff with our buddies John Jacobs and Al Brooks now moving on to FAU and Kentucky respectively. So I think there'll be some uncertainty with Baylor for Gonzaga to plan against. I think Baylor will have a really good end of the first half, and so I'm expecting a Baylor victory in that one, Ashley.
Yeah, I think Gonzaga will win that, just being in Spokane. But it's, to me, a coin toss game. I mean, I think it could go either way. Arkansas and Dallas, you know, Arkansas will have a ton of fans there, probably more than Baylor, but it's a neutral environment. And, you know, Arkansas has got a lot of new pieces, new coach. You know, Baylor, of course, I mean, that's going to be a really fun game, I think. And I think Baylor's going to pull that one out. You know, how do you see that game? Are you optimistic the Bears will win that one?
Yes. I don't care that there'll be more Arkansas fans there. Baylor's got a better team. Calipari doesn't have his full roster of guys he'll get once that chicken money comes in fully. So I think Baylor, I don't care if the arena is 90% Arkansas fans. I think Baylor's just got a better team and will do it.
Yeah. The one that's probably worries me more than the other side of the bracket even is St. John's in the Bahamas. I think they're going to be really good. You know, they got Kadari Richmond. They got, you know, the guy from Utah, Smith, and they got a pretty nice little roster. And I think that's going to be a tough win to get. I'm going to say VJ Edgecombe with his hometown crowd there is going to pull it out, and Baylor advances to the championship to play either Tennessee or Virginia. I would think maybe Tennessee, you know, given the news of Tony Bennett and just Tennessee's got a better roster. But do you think the Bears will win the tournament in the Bahamas?
I don't think they'll win the tournament. Okay. So I also have the Baylor over the Johnnies. I think better roster. Rick Pitino obviously is a phenomenal coach. He'll be motivated given the collapse / incredible comeback by Baylor and the Bahamas. What's that now? 8 years ago? I think that's the 2016-2017 season. Man, we're getting old. So I think he'll obviously remember that, but I think Baylor's just got too much firepower. As you mentioned, Edgecombe will be motivated since the Johnnies were one of his final schools there. I think pretty clearly in my mind, Tennessee will beat Virginia. Tony Bennett can talk about not liking NIL, but I don't know. I also think he probably woke up one day and said, this isn't the team that makes me want to deal with this anymore. So I expect that Tennessee will beat Virginia, and I think Baylor will ultimately lose to Tennessee. That will be a huge step up in terms of defensive intensity from what Baylor would have faced earlier in the season. Although Baylor's dominated these in-season tournaments recently, man, I think Tennessee will get the Bears in that one.
All right. And then the UConn's the other big one. I'm saying Baylor pulls that upset at UConn. That would be a terrific way to go into the conference season, getting a big win against the two-time defending national champions. I think UConn's going to be good, but I think they're going to struggle some early in the season. And this is one that I'm expecting Baylor to go up there and in a big stage and you know, really get the best of them. UConn, you know, talk about non-conference schedules. That's a team that's not challenging themselves as much either, especially early. They got Memphis, but then they got, you know, Baylor's their first real big test, and then they got Texas and Gonzaga after Baylor. But, you know, I think that's one that Baylor can go up there and you know, pull an early season upset.
Yeah, two schools between Baylor, Texas, and Gonzaga that could win a national championship, and then one that never will in basketball. And I'll let the listeners guess which one I think never will win a national championship or get back to a post-TJ Ford Final Four. I do have Connecticut winning this one, Ashley. I think Alex Caraban will be a problem for Baylor. In my mind, his ability as a big wing will be a little different than whatever Baylor had faced earlier in the season for a wing. That might lead to some pressure in terms of, did Baylor play Jalen at the four? You know, do they downsize at times? How does Omir deal with foul trouble? So I think that'll give him problems. And then just playing in stores, being the first real game of the season for Connecticut, I think recognizing that Scott Drew's in that tier with Danny Hurley nationally will cause some drama. Danny Hurley seems to motivate himself for everything. I still don't think he was ever actually a candidate for the Lakers job. I think his buddy Woj was just getting him a raise. But I think for this one, I do expect Connecticut will beat Baylor in stores.
Yeah, awesome. All right, so let's talk about we'll future podcasts. We'll break down the Big 12, especially as we get to see these teams play more. But I have a couple questions for you on Baylor basketball, then a personal question. So, you know, as far as like leading scorer this year, who do you think it's going to be?
I've gone back and forth on this one a bunch of times, but I'll say Norchad is the leading scorer. Ashley, who do you have?
Yeah, man. I think we're going to have five guys averaging in double figures, but I'll say Norchad only because he's going to get the bulk of the opportunities, you know, inside. Assuming that he does a good job staying out of foul trouble, I could see him having a lot of games where he's, you know, double doubles and the point total is over 15. So I like that pick. As far as like, who do you think is going to be the biggest surprise on the roster?
If Rob Wright is not, I guess Rob Wright would probably be the big surprise to a lot of people. And then I think guess Jalen C would be the other surprise for folks. Cause I think Rob Wright, if you were a 365 listener, Rob Wright hype has reached pretty high levels and it's become a tongue twister unto itself. But I think Jalen C would be the guy that people won't expect to have as big of games as he will. And I think he'll have a 15-20 point game in one of those big non-conference games and establish that he's a worthy replacement for Jalen Bridges.
Yeah. For me, I think those are natural picks because they're newcomers. But I think it's going to be Jaden Nunn. I think Jaden Nunn is going to put together a really good season on both sides of the ball. I think he's going to shoot it efficiently like he did last year. I think he's going to be one of our top two defenders. And so I think he's going to be a huge impact guy. And you know, because of the focus on Roach and Edgecombe and Omir, I just think he's going to get a lot of opportunities. You know, Love would be another one that we just almost are expecting not much from him because of his injury history. But, I mean, he's a terrific player when healthy. And so if he's blessed with good fortune, I think he's going to be a huge impact guy as well. But I'll say none just because of the lack of injury history.
I think that's a good pick.
All right, personal question would be, I know you're getting married soon, right? Like, when is, remind us of the date?
January 31.
Oh, January. Oh, so coming up. Are all those preparations, are those going well? And have you, or is that all left to your fiance, or what's the latest with that?
She is definitely the lead and dominant decider/planner, great planner, does an excellent job at all that stuff. And we are planning out the honeymoon now. We're getting married in Maui.
Yep.
So we will be seeing some of the Hawaiian Islands. And the KU Baylor game is actually a few days later. So for the first time since the win at Allen Fieldhouse before COVID hit, I will not be attending a KU Baylor game in person. Oh, I've been to everyone in Waco.
Nice.
Or in Lawrence since then. So hopefully we will, in kind of the same vein that we were good luck. When I did not attend the game in Lawrence because it was snowing so horribly, I couldn't get anybody to go with me during the unexpected victory for Summit Allen Fieldhouse.
Right.
Hopefully then Baylor will get another victory in the series.
Yeah. Yeah. It is so interesting that we're not playing them there. I mean, but I'm all for it. I mean, I think if you're going to play them once, you want to play them in Waco. And we've had a lot of success in Waco against them in recent years. Well, hey, listen.
Five in a row, I think.
Yeah, I know. I think it's 5-5 the last 10, so that makes sense. Because they beat us in 2020 in Waco, but we beat them there. So yeah, it's 5-5 the last 10 games, I believe. Well, hey, this has been great. You've been listening to a basketball podcast with Ashley Hodge and Kendall Kout, Sick 'em Bears.
Heck yeah.